Well, as we've reported, the Summit Land Conservancy has raised the money to purchase the conservation easement for the 158-acre Oscarthorpe Ranch. In the studio, doing our happy dance, Director Cheryl Fox. Good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations. I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time. Last time you and I talked, we had some $600,000 to raise. So what put you over the top here?
That's right. You know, it was kind of down to the wire. A week ago, we were looking at still $535,000, and that was if we were able to achieve some matching grants that we had out there. But, you know, we were looking at a very scary situation. We had to have this money in hand by the end of March. And, you know, $500,000 is a lot of money. And I just am amazed at the way this community stepped up. We put it out there and said, this is it. This is the final hour. And, you know, are we going to lose this? And over the weekend, starting late Friday, some people started to say, you know, we're not going to lose this. Here, we can help. Many people who had already helped once decided to help again. Late Friday night, 6 p.m., I got a call from the George S. and Dolores Story Eccles Foundation offering a final dollar grant, which means if we could raise the intervening dollars, they would sweep it to the finish. And we put that out on our email on Saturday. So my team and I worked all weekend long, which was amazing. And, you know, by late Sunday, early Monday morning, with the gifts that people had either given online or told us they were sending, we realized that we were there. So now, you know, those gifts need to come in, and we will be able to close this transaction.
Yeah, so are we including the $500,000 from Summit County? Because Tom Fisher has told us that you don't have that money yet and won't until the property actually closes.
So there are some grants that will come at closing, and the county's $500,000 is one of those. The federal money is too. It goes directly to the escrow account. So we bring money and other funding sources do. So sometimes the money comes first to the Summit Land Conservancy. We have a restricted fund where it sits, and then it goes to the escrow for closing. The county money will do that too. We'll go to just straight to escrow.
So the March 31st deadline was in order to capture that $8.8 million from the federal government?
Correct. And because also, you know, if you'll remember, a year ago, the family, you know, we thought we would have all the money raised a year ago, and we didn't. And the family said, okay, we'll take out these loans, we'll pay off the bequests that we have to pay off, and we'll give you another year. And so this was the end of the other year at the end of March. And, you know, a lot of people called me and offered creative solutions for extending the deadline, and we really didn't have that opportunity. You know, if you get a loan, you have to have an income stream to pay it off. And we're like, well, what would that be? So, again, the community just stepped up. It was amazing. People ask their, you know, their mothers, their fathers, their adult children. I mean, I have so many thank yous. Just, you know, from the very beginning, from people who stepped up early and said, you know, we will give. From, you know, our conservationist of the year last year, Little Tennyson, who gave his entire piggy bank, Bill White. I mean, just a huge number of people, over a thousand people. It's just amazing to see what a wonderful community this is and how supportive they are when we really have a chance to do something special.
Okay. But again, so this doesn't actually close until June?
Oh, no, we hope to close in April.
Ah.
So, right. Yeah.
Okay. So, what happens now? I guess you just have a lot of accounting to do here.
We have a lot of thank you notes to write. We do, and, you know, we have my operations director has an MBA, Amber Nelson, because it is, you know, we need somebody who's very thorough. So we get it all accounted for. It all goes to closing. Also on staff, Kate Saddlemeyer, our conservation director, is an attorney. So she's finalizing all of the documents, getting it through. You know, the NRCS can't say no at this point, but they have to check off. They have a big checklist. And they say, does your conservation easement say yes? This, yes. Does your conservation easement say that? So they're finishing that process. Our conservation easement has actually been approved by the NRCS, as has the appraisal. So we really are, at this point, just screaming towards the finish.
Okay. And talk to us a little bit about what the recreation easement looks like.
So there is no recreation easement on this property. The $500,000 from the county is just for open space and protecting the Heritage Farm as a farm. Basin Rec was not able to come to an agreement with the family for any additional funding. So we have done this entire transaction without any funding from Basin Recreation.
So this is from the half million is from the county itself.
That's right.
Where are they getting the money? I guess I can ask Tom Fisher. He's right after you.
That's right.
Okay, but you had hoped to get another $500,000 from Basin Rec?
We had hoped to get several million dollars from Basin Rec in exchange for winter cross-country access. And as we went through the process, it became apparent that that really wasn't going to work. And, you know, other people are probably better to answer that question than I am. That was a major stumbling block for the organization. The family and the conservation easement would continue to allow recreational access if at some point in the future that is something that somebody wants to do. The easement does not preclude it as long as the agricultural use can still take place. So it might still happen in the future, but at this point, Basin Rec is not a part of this transaction.
Yeah, so what was the conflict, though? I mean, because we have lots of recreation access there on Land of Oz. I mean, it doesn't work the same way on Ranch Road?
The concern, Basin Rec couldn't get comfortable with, as my understanding, Basin Rec couldn't get comfortable with some of the, I don't want to say restrictions, but some of, you know, the agricultural use had to be first because so much of the money was coming, you know, 50% was coming from the federal government. And also, you know, a significant portion, another 22% was coming from the family. And the whole reason the family was doing this is because they are farmers and ranchers. They have to stay in business. So farming and ranching and those, the ability to continue to do that had to be something that you know, took precedent. So I will say that the Basin Rec Committee, the staff of the county and county council and the family spent a lot of time trying to negotiate an agreement. Both sides gave and said yes, and in the end, they just couldn't get comfortable enough with each other's requirements.
But stay tuned. There may be an opportunity, you say, to do something?
It's not precluded by the conservation easement, but again, I don't know. At that point, it would probably be between Basin Rec and the family.
Okay. And where do you turn your attention to now? What else you got to work on?
Well, the Summit Land Conservancy is working to close two additional NRCS-funded conservation easements over the course of this year, a 90-acre piece up on the Weber River in Hennifer, as well as about an 850-acre piece in Chalk Creek Canyon outside of Colville. We have a couple of projects, small projects with the city on expanding the McPolin Farm conservation easement to include the creek. And then, of course, you know, Treasure Hill wants a conservation easement, so we will be talking with the city about that.
Okay. And in the meantime, we've got the Snow Ranch Pastures. That's been kind of pushed along by Utah Open Lands. Is there any way to join forces here?
Well, in fact, we are telling people who are calling us at this point, you know, we took the Osgathorpe thing off of our website, and we are encouraging people to reach out to Utah Open Lands, utahopenlands.org, and make a contribution in that direction. You know, I talked to Wendy Fisher yesterday, and they are somewhere about where we were a week ago. And, you know, a week, here we are today. So, yes, if people feel like they missed the opportunity to contribute to Osgathorpe and they want to help protect heritage ranches and important open space in this community, they can certainly reach out to Utah Open Lands and do it that way, too.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
A huge thank you to KPCW from, you know, the beginning of this transaction. Being able to be here and speak to you and your listeners has really made a difference. So, you know, we could never have found the, I don't know at this point, 1,100 donors without being able to be here on your local news hour. So thank you so much.
Cheryl, thank you. KPCW News Time 8:22. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meets at 1 o'clock tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville. They'll begin by interviewing applicants for a vacancy on the North Summit Recreation Special Services District. In the studio with me with a preview of that meeting agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, first, let's just kind of start with where Cheryl left off. Again, the county committing a half million dollars towards this open space effort?
Sure, and they did that quite a while ago. You'll recall that it was on the council's agenda to approve a grant agreement with the conditions, of course, that the conservation easement say the right things in it that the council wanted. At the time, it was contemplating a recreation easement, but of course, that's off the table now. But the money that's associated with the $500,000 grant does not have a recreation tie to it. This money was the proceeds of a sale of property that went towards open space from the Canyons development. And there's still enough money in that account to grant that $500,000 towards the Oscathorpe purchase, and then that will go into escrow as you discussed with Cheryl.
Yeah, Brian Hatton, district director of Snyderville Basin Recreation, told me they have like $13 million in open space funds still. It just seems to me that they're. Could have been a little bit. What was it that they were looking for?
So between the parties, I mean, of course, this was a discussion between the Oscathorpe family and Basin Rec. And I think Cheryl described it pretty well that you know, we worked for over 2 years to try to get to agreement on what recreation meant on the property, what could happen on the property. And at the end of the day, I think it came down to a business decision by the family that they just couldn't, under the conditions that Basic and Rec needed in order to do winter sports on the property, just couldn't rectify that with the business of the farm. And, you know, we respect that decision. Certainly that's the purpose of the conservation easement and the federal money that came with that. And as Cheryl describes, that's the primary reason it's out there. So, and we want it to be a working farm. So I think that's good.
Yeah. Is it that the cross country skiing would somehow damage the crops?
It's not only that. I don't know the complete thought process that the Oscathorpe family went through, but my guess is it has to do with the preparation for skate skiing, the fact that there's irrigation on the property and it's above ground, and the overall operation of how that would work in the fall and the spring seasons. And so, you know, again, at the end of the day, the family chose not to go that direction. And here's the result. The community has stepped up, and it's going to be preserved. So a good result.
What happens in 100 years if there are no Oscathorpes to ranch that property?
We'd have to dig into the conservation easement and the language around that to see. We didn't really ask that question.
Let's see. We've got, of course, the interviews for the North Summit Recreation Special Services District. Are we just talking about one applicant? Several applicants for one vacancy?
That is correct. So we had one person come off, so there's one vacancy. I think we have 3 to 4 applicants, so a pretty good pool to fill that. And the council will do those interviews, and then at a further meeting afterwards, they'll adopt that.
Okay. North Summit Recreation putting out a plea. This has to do with about a third of their budget being cut due to the elimination of funds by the Summit County Council. So, you gave them plenty of advance notice? But.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you'll recall, over the last few years, we've been reducing the amounts that have gone to youth recreation. Traditionally, over the past Snyderville Basin, all three areas of the county, North Summit, South Summit, and the Snyderville Basin area, had traditionally received around $35,000 a year for youth recreation. In the 2017 budget, the 2018 budget that was completely eliminated for Snyderville Basin, and then in the 2019 budget. For both North Summit and South Summit, that was reduced by $10,000, so a $25,000 budget item was there. The whole idea is that, especially in the North Summit side, where there is a special recreation district, we are asking the community that's time to support the activity that's there. with a mill levy that's supported by the North Summit residents.
So how does that work? I mean, do residents have to vote in that mill levy?
Yes. So just like any mill levy that's started, they would have to vote that in. So it's now being talked about by the North Summit Recreation District Board about what level they would set that mill levy at. Right now, it seems like they're talking about just getting themselves to a point where they can keep their budget about the same as what it has been in the past, so they can continue programming the way they have been and not have to significantly raise fees for those programs. There's no facilities involved. There's no extra type programs that they're trying to achieve. They're just simply trying to keep their programs going.
Right. So that would be on November's ballot, or do they have a special election? Or
it would be on November's ballot. So it would go through the traditional process of the county council having to put that on the ballot, and then they would go through a campaign of sorts, having some kind of outside agency promoting that and going through the regular process.
Okay. In other business, let's see, a consideration of a resolution to annex property into the Mountain Regional Water District. We're talking about a lot in Silver Creek. That's it?
Yeah, so it's just north of the Woodside Homes development. It's not actually part of the Woodside Homes. So it's a lot that has not been annexed into that water district. The infrastructure is already there to do that, so there's nothing extra that needs to be provided. It's just a processing issue.
So currently they have their own private well?
There's no development on the property, so this is to be able to build a home on the property.
Okay. Do they need to bring any water rights to it, or they just have to just pay a connection? And
I believe it's just a connection.
Okay. Let's see, an interlocal agreement with Uinta County, Wyoming. This is on regarding law enforcement. We're renewing a long-time agreement, which does what?
Well, so there's a lot of areas between Uinta County and Summit County that are more easily serviced within Summit County that are more easily serviced by Uinta County, and vice versa. There are places in Uinta County that are more easily serviced, or we can help provide different kinds of services, and that's everything from EMS to fire to law enforcement. This formalizes our ability to cross jurisdictions and do that. I'm sure even before there were formal agreements on that we were doing it in handshake agreements in order to provide mutual aid. But this formalizes it so that if there's incidences that we, let's say we have to exchange funds in order to make sure that everybody's compensated across these jurisdictions, that we have the ability to do that.
All right, let's see. The Eastern Summit County Ag Preservation Committee, there are some changes there that would clarify its operation. Again, what's the purpose of this committee?
Well, the purpose of this committee is to advise myself, the manager, and ultimately the council on open lands and agricultural preservation projects within the North Summit area, or the east side of the county, not the North Summit area. You heard Cheryl talk about a couple of projects that they're still waiting to close on, one in Hennifer and one up Chalk Creek. Well, those go through a process of this committee to get recommended for some level of funding from the county, monies that are gained through property transfers at the through the promontory development. And so this committee is set up to make advice to the manager on those funds.
So one interesting note is that they want to change the committee name from Open Space Advisory Committee to Open Lands Committee. Is that just the open space is more sensitive to
the east
side?
I think one of the things that we don't always realize if we live on the west side of the county or are not familiar with the heritage of the county, and especially the ranching farming side of our county and our business base of that, is that they don't always agree with the terms that are used. And so this change seems to follow what their viewpoints are a little bit closer. And so I'm sure the council will be discussing that with the committee.
And then finally, the discussion regarding monument preservation. What monuments are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about monuments that help us describe parcels of land. And there's a whole system out there all over the country of survey monuments that help surveyors decide how a description of land, a legal description, turns into what happens on the ground. And those sometimes get moved. Either through excavation or animals. Sometimes they're, the old ones are just rocks on the ground instead of actually being, cemented into the ground in some way in order to preserve them. So it's a continual process of finding those, usually through the landowner or the surveyors that discover that they've been moved. And then we have to actually go back and reestablish them.
Okay. Finally, I wanted just to ask you, there's a notice that some council members are meeting Thursday in Oakley with the County Farm Bureau on the issue of issue surfacing. What's that about?
Basically, it's an annual meeting that the Farm Bureau holds after the legislative session to go through any legislation that might be affecting members of the Farm Bureau. And the council gets invited every year, so the majority of the council is going, so we have to notice it.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I've got nothing else today, Leslie.
Hey, Tom, thanks for your time this
morning.
Thank you. It's 8:35. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Planning Commission will get its first look at KPCW's application for an expansion. We'll also be discussing the second phase of the city-owned affordable housing project, Woodside Park, at Wednesday's meeting. Joining me in the studio with a preview, I have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson, along with planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, before we get into the agenda, last week, Park City Council closed on the Treasure Hill bond. So what are the next steps here?
The next steps are technical. We need to take the zoning off the property and make it recreation open space, which is consistent with what we got when we got the original dedication of property back in the 90s. The second thing we need to do is we need to make sure that all the paperwork is put away, including the easements and the ownerships of how the town lift will continue to operate and how those ski runs will continue to operate. The last thing is we're going to make a trip to Recycle Utah and deliver a whole bunch of treasure paperwork that we don't need anymore to them. So we're almost done, but I would expect the rezoning to take the next couple months while we just work through the paperwork.
Okay, let's talk. I thought a bonfire might be good, but I know that would not meet the sustainability goals.
We'd probably get in trouble for that, yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about, since we now own that treasure property and we've got third-party ski lift and
right.
ski runs coming down on the public's open space, Vail Resorts pays Jack Bistricer some $25 million a year to lease some of that property out there. Can we lease that and get some money back?
I'm going to walk away from that question, Leslie, because I don't know the answer. I looked at the paperwork where we transferred the ownership just before we closed on the property, and I did not see fees in that paperwork. So I'm going to defer to Mark Harrington and the city council on that. I think what we're going to see from the planning department side is that it is so essential to our culture in the town to have the town lift that we're going to let it stay. What I tried to make sure of is that there was an opportunity to replace that lift with new technology and make sure we had an easement that was appropriately sized to meet the code. If we were going to encourage the resort to do something, since this sits outside of Hannah's window and my window every single day, is to work on trying to find a better way to deliver beginners down to the bottom of the lift. So all those things are on my plate. The money side of the house, I'm not allowed to touch.
We will see construction up there, though, right? Because there are, at least a couple of single-family lots?
There are a couple of lots remaining not on the property that we purchased. So some of the smaller Sweeney subdivision stuff going on. At the corner of Crescent and Empire, there's one lot where we did a historic site approval last year. That one will probably start construction as well.
All right. Mayor Andy Bierman had said getting a conservation easement for the property could take up to 2 years. Is that about normal?
Yeah, that's normal. There's a couple things that have to happen in order to get a conservation easement put on property. One is you need to establish technically what the conservation values are, and that's a capitalized set of words that says here's why we're doing this. The next thing that needs to happen is you need to establish the value of the conservation easement, especially if you're a private party, and that takes an appraisal and some of the other deals. And then finally, you need an organization that can do an annual review of the conservation easement values. So on all of our property that has a conservation easement on, we have a contract with either Summit, with either Utah Open Lands or Summit Land Conservancy that goes out and takes a look and makes sure that we're managing the property appropriately.
Okay. Let's see. My understanding, Hannah, staff is recommending continuing discussion on the Woodside Park Phase 2 to a later planning commission? I mean, are we ready to go here?
Yes.
Well, so let me respond for Hannah real quick, and then she'll give you the details. But the way we're approaching this is in a pretty business-like way, which means we're blending market rate units together with affordable units so that the city's just not burning money for no reason to try and deliver housing. Hannah's pretty well got this handled, and she'll give you the details on it, but it is a blend of market rate and affordable housing units, and it's a phase two of the project. And it also involves moving the senior center, which we own, and some of the other property up there. So,
yeah, so like he said, I think the goal of this work session is sort of conceptual. It's to give Planning Commission and the public an opportunity to initially review this prior to coming back at a later date for action. And so our goal here is to get feedback, fix any issues that might arise or some concerns that they have. So when we go back for action, it's a more smooth process. Just to give a high-level overview, this is a master plan development that's phase two of the Woodside Park development. Phase one is under construction, and that abuts Park Avenue. And so phase two will continue that pedestrian easement to connect up to Empire. So eventually we'll have a link from Park Ave to Empire, which hopefully will connect the bus system on Park up to the resort. And then there'll be 52 affordable housing units. And then at this moment, there are 7 market rate units, and those numbers may fluctuate a little bit. But overall, you're looking at 59 units with a pedestrian access easement.
How would the mix change?
There may be, they might lower slightly, so we might have a little bit of a smaller project, but that is still sort of in the works here as we discuss options moving forward. But overall, that won't necessarily increase.
Okay, certainly there have been concerns raised that it's too dense of a project, but it is under what's allowed, huh?
Correct, that's exactly it. So this is in the recreation commercial zone, or the RC, and that is measured by floor area ratio. That zone has a floor area ratio of 1, and this is under that. And so staff finds that the density is compliant with the zone in that it's under the required density.
Yeah. So anything that would prevent this from going forward? I think you hope to start construction this summer, right?
Yeah. I mean, we do have to get through this, obviously, land use process. But I think we feel confident moving forward that we can iron out any of the details and get this code compliant by the time it comes for action in front of Planning Commission at a later date.
Okay. Is that it, or do we have a phase three?
As far as I know, that is it for this project.
Okay. Let's see. There is some off-street parking involved in this development. How is that going to impact the neighborhood?
So there's going to be an underground parking garage underneath the affordable units, and then the market rate units will be providing parking on site for them as well.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell people about that project?
No, I think this is an exciting opportunity for the city to deliver some affordable units for Park City residents.
Okay. Bruce, KPCW also on the agenda for Wednesday. The station is looking to expand into space that actually was already approved, but with the build-out of the Bob Wells Plaza, it needs to be in a different configuration?
Yeah, and Hannah is also watching this one for you. She's taking good care of this, and you have to go through the process. A very, very technical way to handle something that should be fairly simple. So when China Bridge was created, we created a subdivision, then we created a condominium, then we sold the space to KPCW. There was some space that was supposed to be used, like 900 square feet, that was supposed to be used for an office that never got constructed for various reasons. And so KPCW's expansion needs to modify the subdivision, so we're not going over property lines. We need to modify the condominium so that KPCW can continue to manage the space correctly. And then there's a minor land use approval to allow you to expand. So it's moving forward. There's a lot of moving parts in the background, but from the planning department's perspective, it's important to keep this local resource on Sweet Alley and on Main Street. And so we're doing everything we can do to make this work consistent with the land management code.
Okay. Then can you kind of just give us the details on this, Hannah? Because
yes,
we're kind of just going to cantilever out. Liquor store stays the same size. They weren't interested in getting bigger, too?
Correct. So I'm not sure of the conversations that occurred with the DABC regarding the liquor store expansion, but you're right. KPCW is the only unit that's expanding within the condo. The expansion will be going out towards the north as well as the west. And like Bruce said, that is just realizing the unbuilt space that was approved in the 2007 CUP. And so it's a modification, and that's why it's coming in sort of three different land use applications. And like he said, it seems rather technical, but it's just memorializing this.
So let me follow up just a little bit, because I think this is important. First of all, the expansion is consistent with the Sweet Alley Master Plan. It's consistent with the Old Town Improvement. We're not going over any of the sidewalks to the west, so Sweet Alley will continue sidewalks and access to the liquor store, and the Bob Wells Plaza will continue to exist. And we're not hiding the historic kiln just underneath the Marsac. So Hannah's making sure that all of those things are consistent with that full suite of land use plans for Sweet Alley. We think it's consistent with Sweet Alley's redevelopment, and it'll work.
Yeah. So what's the staff recommendation on it then?
Staff finds that this is compliant with the land management code, so we are recommending approval.
Okay. Then does it go to City Council as well?
The only items that will go to City Council are going to be the subdivision plat as well as the condominium plat amendment.
Okay. Any remaining concerns for the planning staff?
I think at this point we feel confident in this project.
Okay. Finally, the National Billy Center looking to expand its campus. What are they talking about?
Well, so National Ability Center is looking at expanding their lodge facility.
This is at Round Valley.
This is the Round Valley one, not the. This is at the ranch.
Yeah.
Right. And so, about a year ago, they had a conditional use permit approval that allowed them to do a number of additional uses in that location. But we were continuing to talk to them about adding additional beds, if you will, in the lodge for those athletes that are going to stay out there for a week or a month or whatever it's going to take as those athletes develop. At this point, we're changing the master plan, or recommending changing the master plan, to allow for an additional lodge facility out there so that the athletes have an opportunity to stay housed on site. We're currently in negotiations with them, and I think the negotiations are going really well, about making sure that those units stay available either for the National Ability Center employees or the athletes that are staying in that location. So you wouldn't see that location go out to just the public for nightly rentals. This is directly related to National Ability Center's operations.
Okay, Bruce, Hannah, thanks for your time this
Thank
morning.
You, Leslie.
In partnership with Park City Film, the People's Health Clinic brings the film The Providers to the Jim Santee Auditorium Thursday night for a free community screening. That'll be followed by a panel to discuss the film and the issues raised in it. In the studio, I have the director of People's Health Clinic, Beth Armstrong, development director, Amy Armour, and on the phone with me, I have the director of the film, Anna Moot Levin. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So,
Hello.
Beth, maybe you want to start. Just give us the details of when, where, and...
Absolutely. So the Providers will be screening on Thursday, March 28th at the Jim Santee Auditorium. That's this Thursday. And, of course, that's at 1255 Park Ave. The admission is free. And we hope as many people that are in town and don't have other plans can come and watch the film. And then after, we have a wonderful panel discussion with four community pretty high-power players. So it'd be a great panel discussion after.
Okay, you're going to moderate, I think, the discussion. Who else
That's
is going
right.
to be on the panel?
So we have Dr. John Hannerhand, Wing Province, who is a doctor and emergency doc at Intermountain. He also grew up in a rural area and saw patients with his father. We also have, who do we have, Beth?
We have Rochelle Flynn, and we also have Craig Van Straelen, one of our business owners in town that actually found himself in between insurance and came and utilized the clinic. So he's going to talk about that experience.
Well, let's bring Anna into the discussion. Anna, tell us about the film. I mean, what is the film about?
So the film follows three rural healthcare practitioners who are at a small town clinic in northern New Mexico. And we filmed with the healthcare providers and their patients over the course of 2.5 years. And it really follows their journeys to provide access to healthcare in a rural, underserved community that's facing challenges with a shortage of doctors as well as the opioid epidemic.
Yeah. So how did you come about the story? I mean, did you know some of the providers or?
Well, so actually Laura, my co-director, and I, we spent about 6 months talking to people all across the country involved in rural medicine and family medicine. And we were really curious at the idea of what does today's quote-unquote country doctor look like in rural America that's facing economic challenges, where substance use disorder is a major issue. And so eventually we spoke to the folks at a community clinic in northern New Mexico, El Centro Family Health, and we were just so captivated by their dedication and commitment to working in a medically underserved community that we decided to set the film there.
So what issues does the film then touch on? I mean, what is it that we're going to discuss about afterwards, I guess, is...
Yes, well, the film touches on the issue of the shortage of medical professionals in rural communities. So the challenge of retaining and recruiting healthcare professionals. And as we see in the film, the research indicates that the best way to have more healthcare professionals in rural communities is to really grow your own. And so Matt Probst, who's the medical director and a physician assistant at El Centro Family Health, starts a program working with local high school students to inspire them to pursue careers in medicine. We also see that substance use disorder, particularly opioid use disorder, is a major issue. And Dr. Leslie Hayes, who's in the film, was recognized nationally for her work incorporating opioid use disorder treatment into her practice as a family physician. And so these are the primary issues that we see explored in the film.
Okay. And Beth, I mean, are those issues relevant here in our community?
Absolutely, Leslie. We're very lucky that we have so many volunteer providers here. The only difference between us and El Centro, we actually cover about the same square miles as far as population. They are federally qualified health centers, so they actually do billing, whereas People's Health Clinic, we don't bill any patients. It's free to anyone who comes in. We also utilize a larger number of volunteer providers, and we also tend to not have, we have mental health issues, and we provide mental health counseling. We don't do as much on the opioid addiction as we send most of those over to either Intermountain or to University of Utah.
Okay. So what are you going to be focusing on then following the film?
Well, Dr. Province, who's an ER doctor, and also Dr. John Hanrahan will be talking about the need for volunteer providers and why it's important to them to have served in rural America. And actually, as hard as it is to believe, Park City is designated as rural. So our hospital is a rural hospital. And that's because we encompass so much of the East County.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to say about Thursday
night?
Sure.
I would love to also say, I think one of the things that most people don't realize when they're thinking about Park City, which is shown in the movie, is that there is a need, that Park City has a great need for this service, and that it is vitally important that we're here to provide the service to so many people like it is in El Centro.
Okay, Beth, right. Amy, and Anna, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:55.